Now, I want to tell you something about the desperation of a suffering alcoholic, and I assume an Al-Anon as well. I'm going to ask you something. If you work with alcoholics, I'm going to encourage you not to do anything to release the desperation a newcomer comes to us with. Because the desperation I came here with is the single only resource that will motivate me to take the beginning actions that I otherwise would never dream of taking to save my own life. And I have proof. 3 days later, there's a knock on my front door. You know who it was? It's my wife with the two kids. I answered the door. She looked me right in the eye and she says, "Can we come home?" I looked at her and all of a sudden I said, "Well, I don't know. You hurt me when you left."
Oh my God.
"If you promise never to abandon me again, you can come back." And you know she moved back? We need the Al-Anon family groups. I'm grateful for them. Because this isn't a Wayne Butler disease. Do you know this is the only spiritual disease known to mankind that does not have the mercy to kill the afflicted one first? It kills everybody and everything about us first. The kids go, the wives and the husbands and the families and the jobs. Everything about me goes, "I'm not afraid I'm going to die if I drink. I'm afraid I won't." Sometimes people are lucky enough to die the first time out. I wouldn't be. I'd suffer and suffer and suffer. So I'm grateful I got to come back here. See, I'm not one who tells somebody not to drink no matter what. Because I'm responsible in part for a man to die. 15 years ago, I spouted off at the mouth things I didn't know nothing about. I started following all the chanting and stuff. And I started saying, "Don't drink no matter what. Don't drink no matter what. Don't drink no matter what. Don't drink no matter what." One night, my best friend Jack went to a midnight meeting and was having a problem. And I said, "Jack, don't drink no matter what." And Jack went home and hung himself. I wish he'd have drank. We can treat alcoholism. Can't treat a dead man. And don't come up to me after the meeting and tell me that it wasn't my fault. I know it wasn't my fault. But I know I didn't help nothing. So I'm just not going to say nothing. If a person needs a drink, they will, and we'll come back. I'll tell you how I know that. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in November 1972. I left that family because of fear of what I might do to them. So I left. And I went to the only place I had, Larry's Oasis. When I couldn't stay there no more, I went to the streets. And I started eating out of dumpsters, and eventually I started living in them. I know I don't look like a dumpster diver, but I am. And I'll tell you what, if you live in Illinois in the wintertime, you're going to be a dumpster diver too, because it gets cold out there. And I found a secret out. If you jump into a dumpster with about 3 feet of decomposing garbage, it gives off a strange kind of a heat. You don't get frostbite. And if you're hungry, I remember one morning I heard a knock on my dumpster door. I was home. I opened up the front door. And there's my dad looking down at me. And he says, "Wayne, do you want to come home?" "No! Look at me, Dad. Don't this look cozy? I'd invite you in if there was room. And if it wasn't for you and Mom, I wouldn't be here anyway." That's what I thought. What I said was, "No thanks, Dad. I'm doing fine." And he closed the door. And rudely left. So I knew he didn't love me either. And it got too cold to stay in that dumpster. So I broke into this abandoned car behind Harvey's restaurant, Moline. And I have a way with 80-year-old night waitresses. We neurotics are quite charming. And I talked her into giving me a hot cup of water and some Heinz tomato ketchup so I could make tomato soup. And then she'd hide saltines out back in the garbage can so I could pick them up before I came in so that Harvey wouldn't find out because she's afraid he'd fire her. And then later on, she cut me a deal and she told me if I'd mop and wax her dining room floors so she wouldn't have to do it, she'd give me 2 sausage sandwiches on whole wheat toast. And I cut the deal. And then one night, Harvey came in. Now, I didn't know about Harvey. Harvey was an alcoholic. I didn't know that. Harvey stood about this big, and I swear to God, he was butt ugly. He was so ugly. He had a nose that was 3 times the size of mine. It was straight in the middle and had basketballs on both sides. I don't know if you've ever seen a bad whiskey nose. Now, no offense, but he like had pockmarks on the end of his nose, like from bombs going off. And then he had these, he had underneath the skin, you could see him, red and purple and black blood veins. And I swear to God, when his nose would, or when his heart would beat, his nose would thump. And old Harvey came in one night. Now here's where one alcoholic reached out to another alcoholic. If he wasn't an alcoholic, he couldn't have done this because he wouldn't have understood me. But because he was as I am, he understood. And he could reach me at a level that the earth people don't have a possibility of reaching us. He tricked me is what he did. Harvey came in and he pulls this brass coin out of his pocket. One side has got two A's. On this other side, it's got nothing but a prayer. God grant me something. Didn't say nothing about money, food, or shelter. Now, Harvey knew I was hungry and broke. He knew that. He saw me. He knew how I lived. He didn't rub it in my face. Instead, he tricked me. He says, I got some friends of mine down at 416 16th Street. Now, this is what he really said. He said, you take this coin down there, you tell them Harvey sent you, and they're going to help you. That's not what I heard. What I heard was, we know you're broke, so we're going to give you some pocket dough. And if you go down there, they're going to give you some food to eat because we know you're hungry. And three or four packs of Pall Mall tailor-made cigarettes. That's what I heard. I haven't had a tailor-made for a long time. So I went down there the next day. 416 16th Street. Now, he told me there'd be a light bulb hanging in the cellar entranceway, and he said if that light bulb was on, to go in. They're expecting you. Now, he didn't tell me what this organization was. He just said, go there. I said, okay. He didn't ask me how much I drank, where I worked, how much money I made. He said, go there. They're going to help you. And so I went there the next day, and I saw it. It was a building, 416 16th Street. Had a giant sign pasted on the side of the building by the city of Moline which said, building condemned. Do not enter. Right beneath it was another sign with an arrow pointing into the cellar said, AA 16th Street, welcome. Messing with you already. And then I looked down into the cellar entranceway and there indeed was a light bulb. The windows were painted black. I couldn't see in. They couldn't see out. And the light bulb was not on. It was flickering. Do you hear me? He didn't tell me what it meant. If it was flickering, it was some kind of a code. He said if it was on, go in. But it wasn't. It was flickering. It made me insane. So I went to Larry's Oasis and had some Budweisers and came back because when I'm oiled up, I don't care who I'm meeting. And I went charging right through that basement door because I don't need an entrance now. If they're expecting me, I'm showing up. And I didn't notice that doorway was 5'10"-ish. I'm 6'3". I caught it right across the eyebrow. And the impact literally lifted me off my feet and I slid into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. About 6 feet inside the door is this round table with six or seven old buffoons waiting to die. That was my opinion. I slid between two of the ugliest ones there. And this old ugly geezer gets up out of his chair and looks at me and goes just like this. And then I heard him say, slide right in here, dummy. We got a wrench to fit every nut that comes in the door. I didn't like him right away. So I'm reaching for that 357 I got in my boot because I'm going to pop a cap in his butt's what I'm going to do. And then he says to me, dummy. I looked up at him. That's what I heard. I looked up and I said, my name's Wayne. He says, I got it, dummy. I'm going to be your sponsor. That saved his life. You might wonder why. I mean, I've never been to AA before, but I've played baseball. Sponsors pay for everything. Found out Barney needed a co-signer. I got up off that floor and promptly stuck my head right up his butt. They say Barney should have had turn signals on his hips to keep from breaking my neck should he turn left or right without telling me. Because wherever he went, I was there. And I drank every day. I drank before meetings. I drank after meetings. When I could not stand your love another minute, I drank during meetings. Now, by the way, if you ever find a gathering like this where a drinking drunk is not welcome to sit and listen, that's not AA. That's a gathering of people forgot where they came from. However, if you're like me, I'll just share this with you. If you're drinking, you're welcome, but we do want you to behave. Therein lies my problem. See, I can either drink or I can behave. I just can't do them at the same time. I remember I was drinking about 4 years going to meetings. I came into my home group one night, late, disrupting the speaker, of course. And one of the old-timers yelled up, and I came in pretty peaceable. I'd been down at the Oasis getting spiritually lubricated. And I came in to let them help me, because I'd heard him say, helping me helps them. So I showed up ready to let them help me. And this old guy says, you got to quiet down. Something happened to my serenity. And I looked at him and I said, I don't want to. Another old guy gets up and says, you got to sit down. You're disrupting the meeting. I looked at him and I said, I don't have to. Another old timer got up and said, you got to leave. You're welcome to come back tomorrow when you can act better, because we don't kick anybody out of AA, but we have a right to hear a peaceful message in Alcoholics Anonymous. You have to leave. I looked at him and I said, you can't make me. Oh, yes, they can. See old Ted over there? Guy in the green coat and the white hair? About four guys his size, each one grabbed an arm and a leg. Talked some goofy newcomer into holding the door open. I noticed as I flew by. Just before I landed out in the middle of 16th Street, I heard one of them yell out, keep coming back! I wasn't sure about their sincerity. Then about 4.5 years drinking, I came into the back of the Moline group, and my sponsor was there, and I heard him yell out, hey, dummy! That's what I heard. So, what? He said, did you know this program tends to work better if you don't drink? I didn't know that. I've been going to meetings for 4.5 years. I didn't know that. It made my mind go crazy. And I reached down into my boot and I pulled that .357 out. I wheeled it around and I fired a round off at Barney's face. And I missed him 6 inches high. There's a standing joke at the Moline group. That if Barney would have been 6 foot tall, he'd be 6 foot under. I came through the next morning in a 6-point leather restraints tied to a steel bed in the center of a padded room at Franciscan Mental Health Center in Rock Island, Illinois. It was my 17th trip to the psych ward. I was black and blue from head to toe from a little AA group therapy. Boy, that method of working the steps was impressive. I had a visitor that morning. You know who it was? Barney. I couldn't get rid of him. He's like a maggot on a bad piece of meat. I could not get him off of me. So I'm tied face up in this steel bed. I mean, I'm strapped down where there's a muscle anywhere. And he comes walking, and the nurse wouldn't let him come in alone in case I take my false teeth and bite through the leather straps. I'm naked, so the only way he can get even with me is nudge the nurse and go like this. And I'm thinking, they gotta let me out of here sometime, pal. Then it's like he has ESPN. He says, dummy? That's what I heard. I said, I don't know if they're gonna let you out of here. They're talking about keeping you and studying you a while. That'll get you doing some controlled thinking. He says, but here's what I know. If they let you out of here, and you come with us and do what we did and still do, you can get well too. Not one word of judgment. Not one word about what I did. He welcomed me back. And then he went one step further. He went to the board of psychiatry and talked them into releasing me to him. This man, you think I'm crazy? I remember one time I asked Barney, why? Why? Why weren't you scared of me? And he says, I ain't scared of you, tough guy. And I said, why? He said, because it's in our book. It says we don't need to fear to go to the most sordid spot on earth to carry this message, that God will keep us unharmed, and I believe it, so I do it. I said, thought to myself, damn, how am I going to get him now? Took my last drink, November 8th, 1977. I didn't mean to. I just got kicked out of the Rock Island Rescue Mission about 4:30 in the morning for rifling pillowcases. I did notice there was people's heads on them. Then I decided to walk to the Moline Group, which was about 65 blocks away. I got there about 9 o'clock in the morning. I stopped and stole a 6-pack of hot Budweiser. By the time I got there, it was cold enough to drink. And I remember sitting on the front stoop of the Moline Group drinking that 6-pack. I got through 3 cans and made the conscious decision to kill myself, and I felt relief. It was finally over. I'm leaving. And I'm going to tell you something. My sponsor, Barney, shows up early. Guess what I do? I show up early. He came an hour early for that meeting. Thank God he did, because I just made the decision to kill myself. And I was getting ready to leave. Here comes old Barney. Now, he never said a word about the beer I was holding in my lap. He looked me right in the eye, and he knew I was drinking. There was 3 empty cans, 3 to go. He didn't say a word about the beer. He said, hey, dummy. That's what I heard. He says, why don't you come on in and help me set up the meeting? I said, well, it ain't like I got a big day planned. I'm going to kill myself later. Well, so I hid the other 3 cans in the bushes in case I changed my mind, I suppose. And I haven't had a drink since then. I can't explain it to you. I went in, helped my sponsor set up the meeting. I left that meeting and have not drank from that day to this day. That was November 8th, 1977. When I was brand new, Barney sat me down and he said, dummy, said, what we're going to do this first year is we're going to build a foundation for life. I want you to give your first year entirely to AA. Don't go get a college degree just yet. Don't become a super counselor just yet. That's what he said to me. I'm not judging, just reporting. He said, just be a member of AA for a year. He says, because you're going to build a foundation upon which God is going to place a house with many rooms. And if you do it right, it's going to be a mansion, and you're going to need a mansion because the friends you're going to amass in the AA way of life will require a mansion built on a solid foundation. However, if that foundation isn't solid, I promise you the day is going to come when an emotional storm of such force and magnitude, if it's not solid and maintained throughout the years, will give way, crumble, and you will drink. And I bought it. And so for that first year, I did every stupid, moronic thing that had nothing to do with my manifestations, if you will. I mean, why get a job? What the hell does that have to do with staying sober? Buy my wife a flower? Why? I don't like her. He said, she doesn't like you either. Buy her 2. One for you and one for her. I hated his guts. He had me greeting people at the door. He had me mopping floors, washing cups that weren't even dirty just in case. He had me pass the 7th tradition till he found out it didn't make it back. I paid it back. And then I was 3 weeks. By the way, for those of you that are here for your first convention, I want you to know something. I'm not a professional speaker, and neither are any of my friends. We're just drunks. I've never been trained to do this. I'm just a drunk. I don't get paid to do this. I'm here because my life depends on it. Secondly, because I love being with my own kind. That's why I'm here. But I'm going to tell you something. When I was 3 weeks sober, my sponsor gathered me up and said, "Dummy! We're going to a convention." Now, there was about 15 or 30 of us in my home group. "There's going to be 1,200 people," he says. I said, "Really? 2,400 eyes. 3 zillion teeth. All wanting to hug you." And he says, "But you can't go looking like that and smelling like that." I was 3 weeks sober. I had a full head of hair down in my butt. I had a full mustache that was unkempt because I was so ashamed that I had no teeth. My sponsor somehow knew that that wasn't who I was. And so he offered me the opportunity to clean my face up and go get a new set of clothes. And I took him up on it because I knew that was true. Now, if you got long hair and you got a beard, I'm not putting you down. I'm telling you about me. That's it. Because that's not who I am. And then he took me to his favorite store to shop for a new set of clothes, the Salvation Army. Couldn't wait to get there. This is November 1977. Thanksgiving. It was just a time of gratitude. So we go in to buy me a suit. Well, the only suit they happen to have in my size was this lime green double knit polyester. The inside lining was yellow, and it had green tennis rackets. So we bought it. And then I said, "I'm picking out the shirt, pal." So I went over to the shirt rack, and I saw this real cool. I thought it was a silk shirt. Brushed polyester. It had animals on it. I liked animals. My psych report reads, "Wayne does not play well with pets." The collar went down to here, so I bought it. Then we went over to the underwear, and I said, "Nope." Then we went to the shoes. I wear about a 13 and a half, about a 13, I suppose. Gunboats, I've heard every gunboat joke there is. The only 13 gunboats they had in stock that day. Any disco people here? Remember those black and brown box-toe Oxford hippie shoes with a 2.5-inch platform sole and a 4 to 6-inch heel? That's all they had! So we bought them. I got a Salvation Army for $1.85. And he takes me to this convention where these speakers from California were talking. Stands me at the front door and makes me a greeter. So I'm standing there in whatever this was. And you know who the speakers were? You're going to see some above them stars. A guy by the name of Chuck C. And he had his wife Elsa with him. A guy by the Norm Alpy. Dottie Shore. She's right there. A guy by the name of Johnny H. Clancy I. And Tom Brady from Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm going to tell you something. I was blessed that day. And I hope some of you that are new may be blessed as I was this weekend. Because I left there with a new attitude about Alcoholics Anonymous, though I didn't know it. Because you see, Chuck C. said I suffered from unconscious and conscious separation from a loving Father God. And that alcohol had become my solution for that problem. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, in the chapter, The Vision for You, tells me that we have a sufficient substitute for the effect produced by alcohol. A power, that is, to say. Here in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, of which there's no substitute anywhere else. And I tapped into that power. I fell in love with AA that weekend. I remember when Chuck C. walked up past me, greeted my sponsor and didn't say nothing. And then he looked at my suit and couldn't... He... Then he grabbed Elsa and says, "Come on, Mama." Norm went by laughing. Clancy went by laughing. Johnny frisked me. Then I couldn't take it another minute. I turned around and I looked at Barney and said, "Barney, are they laughing at me?" And he says, well, yeah. Yeah, they are. You're a sight to behold, pal. He says, you know what? If you ever learn to laugh at yourself, you'll never be left unamused. I hated his guts. And I did that for the first year. And I want to share this with you to caution you if you're new. At the end of my first year, something happened to me. I thought I was transformed. The truth is my ego came back. At my home group, the sponsor gives you a chip and says nice things about you and sits down, and then you come up and say some nice things about him or her. Well, I sort of did that. Barney came up and made a great speech about me. He lied, made everything up, and then sat down. And as I ascended the podium, you see, I have a year now. Barney has about 19,000. And on my way to the podium, I realized I was a miracle. By the time I got to the podium, I realized I was the miracle. And I happened to glance over my sponsor's head, and I saw a picture of Bill and Bob. And I envisioned my picture floating up between them. I gave an acceptance speech. Realized what a loser my sponsor really was. Because look at how far I'd come in just a year. And look at him, my God, he has to work. So I fired him. Didn't tell him. And I got me a new sponsor. You know who it was? For the next 6 years, I did steps 1, 12, and 13. By the way, ladies, if Nora happens to slip out of the room for a minute, and I come up to you and you're under a year, and I say, maybe I'll say something like this, and, hey, would you like to go have coffee and talk about God? At the end of seven years, I weigh 146 pounds. I am now more depressed than I've ever been in my life. I am absolutely convinced unequivocally that AA doesn't work. I can't call Barney because I've been lying on him. I can't call you because I've been coming to you lying about him. I've only got one friend to go to. I called my psychiatrist. Now, what I'm about to tell you is not an opinion. Please don't leave here saying I gave an opinion. This is my personal experience. I hope you'll accept it as such. I called my doctor and I said, Doctor, AA doesn't work. I need help. 7 years. Dry, without a drink. And I'm more insane now than I've ever been. And the doctor brought me in for some tests. He drew my blood, told me I had a chemical imbalance and needed a chemical called lithium. And then he said I needed amitriptyline, which is a pain blocker. And then he recommended me for a voluntary program to test a new antidepressant called Prozac. And I said, I'll do it. And I got the prescription, went and picked up the pills, and then from nowhere a thought came into my mind, hey, dummy. That's what I heard. Don't you think it'd be a good idea to call Barney now? So I called Barney. And you know what? I haven't talked to him for a long time. I've only talked about him. He immediately, abruptly stopped doing what he was doing and said he'd meet me at the Made Right restaurant. I couldn't figure out why he wanted me to meet him in public, but then I found out it's because there's witnesses there. So I walk in and I set the bag of pills down before I took them. And I sat there and I looked at Barney and he looked at me and he said, what's the problem? I said, Barney, I'm bipolar. He looked at me and he says, I know. We all know. We've known for a long time you're bipolar. He says, you know what, dummy? One of these days, you're going to be walking down 16th Street, and you're going to hear the loudest explosion you've ever heard. It's going to be your head popping right out of your ass. And you won't be bipolar no more. And then my sponsor says to me, I'm not a doctor, but I do know this. I suffer from a spiritual condition known as alcoholism, and the symptoms are growing anxiety, depression, and fear, and it's unrelenting. You look to me to be filled with anxiety, depression, and fear. And he says, I know for a fact you have not lived the AA way of life. You have stumbled around it, but you have not lived it. He says, it's my opinion, if you try to incorporate the AA as a way of life, those symptoms will dissipate if you are alcoholic. He says, give us 2 years of your life. He's getting greedy. First time he wanted one. And he said, if after 2 years you're not better, I'll go to the doctor with you and I'll help you take the pills. Is that a deal? He tricked me again. I put the pills away, didn't take them. And for the next 2 years, I was in the big book. See, the thing I left out before was the little thing called the steps. I did the steps as they're laid out in the big book. I used a 12 and 12 for amplification of the symptoms related to the emotional instability I suffered from because of an internal spiritual maladjustment. And at the end of 2 years, my depression was gone as to this very day. It never came back. At the end of 2 years, when I was 9 years sober, I weighed 242 pounds. And to this very day, I weigh over 240 pounds. And I have not suffered the affliction of depression since. And I know it's because I'm with you. And I know it's because I'm in the AA way of life. And I know it's because when I'm working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and participating in AA at any level, that I fit in, I belong, and I'm a part of. When I'm with you, my own kind, I don't feel different. But I have to be taking the steps, and the steps aren't enough. Not only do I got to do the steps, but I've got to incorporate the traditions. I got to become a part of AA. I've got to ensure that in this new millennium, that AA is going to go on for my kids and their kids and your kids. And that it goes on unencumbered by outside ideas. We are the only ones that know. They'll tell us they know because they got letters after their name, but I'm here to tell you, whether you're from Park Avenue or the park bench, from Yale or jail, we're the only ones who truly know. Because when I say to you, I know how you feel, I've been where you are, I felt like that, we got each other connected. But when I tell you what your problems are, you cut me off. I'm glad I know that. My 9th year of sobriety, my sponsor told me I had a dream and I could fulfill it. And if I didn't, it was God's will. I wanted to be a cop. Don't worry, if you're getting a little restless, I'm almost done. And that's what you heard. I wanted to be a cop. But I didn't think I could be a cop. I've been arrested 9 times for domestic violence. I've been arrested 2 times for attempted murder, and they had the right guy. I want to be a cop. My sponsor says, he knew they wasn't going to let me be a cop. But he says to me, you got to try. If you fail, that's God's way of saying I got something better. But first you got to try it and find out that's not what I want for you. And so I bought it. And he told me to get my record expunged. And I went through the legal process, the way to get it legally changed. That was a retarded moment. You know what I mean. So I got my record changed. And I applied for the Sheriff's Department in Polk County, Iowa. And I filled out the application. And to make a long story short, I showed up for my interview in that lime green double knit polyester suit. I wore it for good luck. They asked me where I got it. You know, I passed my interview. And then I took the physical agility test, and I came in for the oral interviews. And I put on the application, I was an alcoholic. I put on there, I was sober 9 years. And when they asked me, they said, we read your application. It says you're sober 9 years. Is that right, Mr. Butler? I said, yes, sir. He says, well, we have a collective opinion. If you've been sober 9 years, that means you're cured. Is that right? Oh. That was a retarded moment. You know what I mean. So I got my record changed. And I applied for the Sheriff's Department in Polk County, Iowa. And I filled out the application. To make a long story short, I showed up for my interview in that lime green double knit polyester suit. I wore it for good luck. They asked me where I got it. You know, I passed my interview. And then I took the physical agility test, and I came in for the oral interviews. And I put on the application I was an alcoholic. I put on there I was sober 9 years. And when they asked me, they said, "We read your application. It says you're sober 9 years. Is that right, Mr. Butler?" I said, "Yes, sir." He says, "Well, we have a collective opinion. If you've been sober 9 years, that means you're cured. Is that right?" Whoa. You can't leave an interview like that and call your sponsor. And I said, "Well," I thought, "let's see. I could drink and get a gun and do bad things." So I just said, "Okay." And that was good enough. They don't need to know. I need to know I can never drink again. And you know, I passed the interview and went in the academy, and I graduated fourth out of a class of 16 in the academy at ILEA. Couldn't believe it. I called my sponsor, Barney. I said, "Barney, I made it. I'm going to graduate fourth. Will you come to my graduation?" He said, "I'd be proud." He was crying. And then I said, "Barney, they gave me my gun." I heard him say, "Oh, shit." See, it wasn't real till then. And then he showed up at my graduation. I want you to know something. Out of 16 graduates, I was the only recovered alcoholic. And here's all this fine citizenry. And there's Wayne's World. They were all dressed for battle. And I remember when they swore me in. I got to tell you something. I felt recovered that day. I felt recovered when they swore me in and the sheriff pinned my badge on. And I saw my sponsor crying. I'll never forget that day. Never, never. As long as I live, I'll never forget it. And I loved being a cop. I just loved it. Loved arresting people. I want you to know something. It's a long way from the back seat to the front seat. How are we doing on time over there, Terry? I got 5 minutes? Okay. I want to share this with you. When I was diagnosed a psychopath, I want you to hear this, newcomer. When I was diagnosed a psychopath, they told me I would never feel the emotion of love as long as I live. That I don't have it. And that's where my anger and hatred comes from. They said I have no conscience, nor will I ever have a conscience. They said I have what's called a got-caught conscience. When I get caught, I feel really, really bad. And last May 8th, I got engaged to a woman that 10 years ago, I actually kept out of prison trying to get her into AA. And got engaged. I was in love. And we got engaged May 8th, and I called my sponsor, and everything was wonderful. Everything was happy, joyous, and free. Called all my friends in AA, sent out 400 save-the-date cards. Ooh. June 15th, she broke up with me and went back to her boyfriend. And I don't say that to put her down. Don't take it that way. She did exactly what she should have done. Her heart belonged to him, not me. And I'm not going to stand up here and put her down. I hear a lot of that, and it ain't right. Because I know you're lying if you do it. I know you're trying to make the other person look bad at their expense, and I ain't going to listen to a word you got to say. And so I'm not going to do that to you today. I'm going to honor her. But it broke my heart. I didn't know that. I was laying on the floor calling my sponsor. I said, "My God, what's wrong with me?" And he said, "Son, you got a broken heart." I said, "Really? I don't like it." And then he says, "Now you know the tragedy of Alcoholics Anonymous." I said, "What's that?" He said, "It's the only tragedy in AA." I said, "What's that?" He said, "We do not have a step to work that will mend a broken heart. I hope you have a lot of commitments." And I'm going to tell you something. The commitments kept me going. And then I got a phone call from my son's mother. She and her new husband was going to forcibly adopt my 12-year-old son. And I swore I'd never let nothing like that happen. I want to tell you, life gets real when this stuff goes on. I'm in a bowl of pain over a broken heart. And then I get this notice in the mail, a subpoena, that I'm going to be sued. And I'm going to tell you something. Lawyers do their jobs good. They're meant to. In that court order was all this stuff about what I used to be like before I got sober. A few things I missed. And about the first 7 years I was sober, which totally discredited all my sobriety. Because when you're sober, the courts think you should be different. And you know what? I went to my sponsor. I said, "My God, what do I do?" He said, "Call your son. Ask him what he wants." So I called Zach, and Zach says, "I want to be adopted." I was on the floor. The phone was on the floor. I couldn't move. And I didn't say a word because you taught me to keep my mouth shut. Don't say nothing bad about other people when you're in pain because it might be wrong. He says, "Well, there's no step to work to mend a broken heart. Hope you got a lot of commitments." And I kept going, just kept moving forward. And in September, I went to a convention in Houma, Louisiana, That's where I first eyeballed Nora. And to make a long story short, because I don't want to take up much more of your time, 2 months later, I got a phone call from my son's mother, who was 9 years sober in AA, and her husband, whom I sponsored at one time, had 12 years. And I got this phone call from her, and she says, "You've got to come get your son. He needs you." See, she drank after 9 years. And he drank after 12. And when she said, "You got to come get your son," my mind exploded. He's not my son. You took him away from me. You made me look bad. You made me want to die. Well, that's not what I said. That's what I thought. What I said was, "Can I call you back?" And then I called my sponsor. And I said, "What do I do?" He says, "Buy a ticket." So I bought a ticket. And I want to share with you. I went back to Illinois. I spent 5 days with my son, and I want you to know that was the 5 most difficult days of my life because I knew something he didn't know. He wasn't my son anymore. And I never said an unkind word to him about his mother. I never said an unkind word about the stepfather he was going to have. I spent 5 days with him and tried to work through some stuff with him that he was going through with his mom. And then 5 days later, I got a plane and came back to California with my guts dragging. I'm not being a victim. That's how I felt. And I just went on with life because you taught me how to get through it by having commitments and doing what I say I'm going to do when I say I'm going to do it. And then out of nowhere, a phone call comes. The court order that I signed at the courthouse in Monterey, California, had 60 days to get from that courthouse to the Rock Island County Courthouse to be stamped and put into law. It didn't. It got lost in the mail. He's still my son. And because of what they went through, she realized that it was the wrong thing to do. And she let my son come spend the rest of the summer with me this year. And I'm going to get him for spring break, and I'm going to get him next summer, and I might get custody of him. And you know what? I asked my son. I said, "I just want to talk to you. Why? You said you wanted to be adopted. What did I do? Because I wanted to clear it up. What did I do?" He said, "You didn't do nothing." He said, "It's just, I was afraid it would hurt my mom if I told her I didn't want her husband to adopt me." And I didn't have it in me to say, "Well, what about me? You took that away from me." Because it's always been about me. And finally, it wasn't about me anymore. It was about my son. And now my son's not mad at me because I put his mother down, because I didn't. You taught me how to be a man amongst men. And you taught me how to respond and react in a civilized society. And this is as most civilized as it's going to get. And there's enough disease in here to... Y2K should be scared of us. And then I fell in love again. And Nora and I are here together. I want to thank you for having me tonight. I appreciate the opportunity that you've given me to participate in Alcoholics Anonymous at this level. And if you're new in this room, and if you're not new, maybe you need to be renewed. Keep coming back. Thanks.